So, we are continuing chapter 25 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. The fact that Hagrid was now on probation became common knowledge within the school over the next few days, but to Harry's indignation, hardly anybody appeared to be upset about it. Indeed, some people, Draco Malfoy prominent among them, seemed positively gleeful. As for the freakish death of an obscure Department of Mysteries employee at St. Munko's, Harry, Ron, and Hermione seemed to be the only people who knew or cared. There was only one topic of conversation in the corridors now, the 10 escaped Death Eaters, whose story had finally filtered through the school from those few people who read the newspapers. Rumors were flying that some of the convicts had been spotted in Hogsmeade, and that they were supposed to be hiding out in the Shrieking Shack, and that they were going to break into Hogwarts, just as Sirius Black had done. Those who came from wizarding families had grown up hearing the names of these Death Eaters spoken with almost as much fear as Voldemort's. The crimes they had committed during the days of Voldemort's reign of terror were legendary. There were relatives of their victims among the Hogwarts students, who now found themselves unwilling objects of a gruesome sort of reflected fame as they walked the corridors. Susan Bones, who had an uncle, aunt, and cousins who had all died at the hands of one of the 10, and she said miserably during herbology that she now had a good idea of what it felt like to be Harry. "I don't know how you stand it. It's horrible," she said bluntly, dumping far too much dragon manure on her tray of screech snap seedlings, causing them to wriggle and squeak in discomfort. It was true that Harry was the subject of much renewed muttering and pointing in the corridor these days, yet he thought he detected a slight difference in the tone of the whisperers' voices. They sounded curious rather than hostile now, and once or twice he was sure he overheard snatches of conversation that suggested that the speakers were not satisfied with the prophet's version of how and why 10 Death Eaters had managed to break out of Azkaban Fortress. In their confusion and fear, these doubters now seemed to be turning to the only other explanation available to them, the one that Harry and Dumbledore had been expounding since the previous year. It was not only the students' mood that had changed, it was now quite common to come across two or three teachers conversing in low, urgent whispers in the corridors, breaking off their conversations the moment they saw students approaching. "They obviously can't talk freely in the staff room anymore," said Hermione in a low voice, as she, Harry, and Ron passed Professors McGonagall, Flitwick, and Sprout, huddled together outside the charms classroom one day. Not with Umbridge there. "Reckon they know anything new?" said Ron, gazing back over his shoulder at the three teachers. "Not if they do, we're not going to hear about it, are we?" said Harry, angrily. "Not after decree, what number are we now?" For new signs had appeared on the house notice. And house notice boards the morning after news of the Azkaban breakout. "By the order of the High Inquisitor of Hogwarts, teachers are hereby banned from giving students any information that is not strictly related to the subjects they are paid to teach. The above is in accordance with Educational Decree No. 26, signed Dolores Jane Umbridge, High Inquisitor." This latest decree had been the subject of a great number of jokes among the students. Lee Jordan had pointed out to Umbridge that by the terms of the new rule, she was not allowed to tell Fred and George off for playing Exploding Snap in the back of the class. "Exploding Snap's got nothing to do with Defense Against the Dark Arts, Professor. That's not information relating to your subject." When Harry next saw Lee, the back of his hand was bleeding rather badly. Harry recommended Essence of Mirtlap. Harry thought that the breakout from Azkaban might have humbled Umbridge a little, that she might have been abashed at the catastrophe that had occurred right under her beloved Fudge's nose. It seemed, however, to have only intensified her furious desire to bring every aspect of life at Hogwarts under her personal control. She seemed determined, at the very least, to achieve a sacking before long, and the only question was whether it would be Professor Trelawney or Hagrid that went first. Every single divination or care of magical creatures lesson was now conducted in the presence of Umbridge and her clipboard. She lurked by the fire in the heavily perfumed tower room, interrupting Professor Trelawney's his increasingly hysterical talks with difficult questions about ornithomancy and heptomology. There it is. Insisting that she predict students' answers before they gave them, and demanding that she demonstrate her skill at the crystal ball, the tea leaves, and the rune stones in turn. Harry thought that Professor Trelawney might soon crack under the strain. Several times he passed her in the corridors, in itself a very unusual occurrence, as she generally remained in her tower, muttering wildly to herself, wringing her hands, and shouting terrified glances over her shoulder, all the time giving off a powerful smell of cooking sherry. If he hadn't been so worried about Hagrid, he would have felt sorry for her. But if one of them was to be ousted out of a job, there could only be one choice for Harry as to who should remain. Unfortunately, Harry could not see that Hagrid was putting up a better show than Trelawney. Though he seemed to be following Hermione's advice, and had shown them nothing more frightening than a Krupp, a creature indistinguishable from a Jack Russell Terrier, except for its forked tail, since before Christmas, he also seemed to have lost his nerve. He was oddly distracted and jumpy in lessons, losing the thread of what he was saying while talking to the class, answering questions wrongly and glancing anxiously at Umbridge all the time. He was also more distant with Harry, Ron, and Hermione than he had ever been, expressly forbidding them to visit him after dark. "If she catches you, it'll be all our necks on the line," he told them flatly, and with no desire to do anything that jeopardized his job further, they abstained from walking down to his hut in the evening. It seemed to Harry that Umbridge was steadily depriving him of everything that made life at Hogwarts worth living: visits to Hagrid's house, letters from Sirius, his firebolt, and Quidditch. He took his revenge the only way he had, redoubling his efforts for the DA. Harry was pleased to see all of them, even Zachariah Smith, had been spurred to work harder than ever by the news that 10 more Death Eaters were now on the loose. But in nobody was this improvement more pronounced than in Neville. The news of his parents' attackers' escape had wrought a strange and even slightly alarming change in him. He had not once mentioned his meeting with Harry, Ron, and Hermione on the closed ward in St. Mungo's, and taking their lead from him, they had kept quiet about it, too. Nor had he said anything on the subject of Bellatrix and her fellow torturer's escape. In fact, he barely spoke during the DA meetings anymore, but he worked relentlessly on every new jinx and counter-curse Harry taught him, his plump face screwed up in concentration, apparently indifferent to injuries or accidents, working harder than anyone else in the room. He was improving so fast it was quite unnerving, and when Harry taught them the shield charm, a means of deflecting minor jinxes so that they rebounded upon the attacker, only Hermione mastered the charm faster than Neville. In fact, Harry would have given a great deal to be making as much progress at occlumency as Neville was making during the DA meetings. Harry's sessions with Snape, which had started badly enough, were not improving. On the contrary, Harry felt as though he were getting worse with every lesson. Before he had started studying occlumency, his scar had prickled occasionally, usually during the night, or else following one of the strange flashes of Voldemort's thoughts or moods that he had experienced every now and then. Nowadays, however, his scar hardly ever stopped prickling, and he often felt lurches of annoyance or cheerfulness that were unrelated to what was happening to him at the time, which were always accompanied by a particularly painful twinge from his scar. He had the horrible impression that he was slowly turning into a kind of Ariel that was tuned to tiny fluctuations in Voldemort's mood, and he was sure that he could date this increased sensitivity firmly from his first occlumency lesson at Snape. Once more, he was now dreaming about walking down the corridor toward the entrance to the Department of Mysteries almost every night, dreams that always culminated in him standing longingly in front of a plain black door. "Maybe it's like a bit like an illness," said Hermione, looking concerned when Harry confided in her and Ron. "A fever or something. Has to get worse before it gets better." "It's lessons with Snape that are making it worse," said Harry flatly. "I'm getting sick of my scar hurting, and I'm getting bored walking down that corridor every night." He rubbed his forehead angrily. "I just wish the door would open. I'm sick of staring at it." "That's not funny," said Hermione sharply. "Dumbledore doesn't want you having dreams about that corridor at all, or he wouldn't have asked Snape to teach you occlumency. You're just going to have to work a bit harder in your lessons." "I am working," said Harry, nettled. "You try it sometime. Snape's trying to get inside your head. It's not a bundle of laughs, you know. Maybe, said Ron slowly. Maybe what? Said Hermione rather snappishly. Maybe it's not Harry's fault he can't close his mind, said Ron darkly. What do you mean? Asked Hermione. Well, maybe Snape isn't really trying to help Harry. Harry and Hermione stared at him. Ron looked darkly and meaningfully from one to the other. Maybe, he said again in a low voice, he's actually trying to open Harry's mind a bit wider, making it easier for you to know. Shut up, Ron, said Hermione angrily. How many times have you suspected Snape? And when have you ever been right? Dumbledore trusts him, he works for the Order, and that ought to be enough. He used to be a Death Eater, said Ron stubbornly. We've never seen proof that he really swapped sides. Dumbledore trusts him, Hermione repeated, and if we can't trust Dumbledore, we can't trust anyone. And I think we'll stop there. I hope you like that, Kitty Boo. The sweetest girl ever. Can't wait to see you tomorrow. I love you so much. I hope you have a good night and sweet dreams. Sleep well. I love you.